Thank you. That's what they call me, where I come from, is John the Indian. But that's not the reason why I am an alcoholic. Although I like to say that I still have a reservation. You got to listen carefully. I tell intellectual jokes. I belong to a discussion group, and every once in a while, they ask me to chair the meeting, and they have a blackboard that puts your name down, and every time I chair the meeting, they put John, and next to it, they build a wigwam. So everybody knows. I also like to thank the people who invited me to come here. I really believe it's an honor too. I've never kid myself the thinking that the people that I usually talk to are usually people who I have no education, and for many years it bothered me, because I used to think that if you don't have an education, you really don't make sense, or you're not up with other people who seems to have talent in choosing words. As a matter of fact, when I was sober a couple of years, I wanted to speak in AA, so there was a group in our area that people said they were all lawyers and doctors, and I should go there and listen to them. I would learn some big word. I've learned two things. I've learned some big words and find out that people with education also as crazy as I am. There is a magic about what program has to offer, and if there is a freedom at all in this life, I feel that I have been touched, and it is a rewarding experience. It's an honorable experience to stand up in front of so many people and no longer feeling of being unworthy, nor do I feel that I must choose the right words, nor do I feel that I might be rejected, but to have the spirit that I can be myself, that I want to be myself, that I dare to be myself. It is one of the things that I think that allowed me to see myself in other people that I have listened to since Friday night. To be able to see myself in other people, it is not what I brought in the program. I'm a skid row drunk. And when I was invited to come here, back in 1957, I was in a mission, and I was in my late 20s. And I have been in missions for the past 7 years. And an Indian fellow walked in. I have once met him before in Tupper Lake, New York. He brought me to his home. He was married then to a nurse. And Ike became an alcoholic, and he lost everything. And he wound up in the Salvation Army in Syracuse, New York. And they started an AA meeting. And he became a member. And someone said to him, there is another Indian in a mission, and he needs help. And he walked in, and he says to me, do you know me? I said, I do. He says to me, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, good for you. Because bum's always joining something. And he says, I'm here to bring you to a meeting. And I said, I don't want to go to a meeting. Because in my recovery, you learn to see, you get to know yourself quite a lot. And when I'm not dressed too well, particularly in the early days, I would not want to be seen with other people. And especially after I come out with a long drunk, I usually have a long hair. And I suffered from wine sores. Somebody talked about wine this weekend. And it would usually take about 3 weeks before my phase would clear up. And I've learned in the program that I'm an extremely sensitive person. I get hurt easily and I don't suffer well. And I can see myself walking to a group of people the way I looked. And I usually don't go anywhere for the first few weeks when I'm in a mission. But Ike says, well, they have coffee and donuts and they're free. I said, we'll go. And that's how I came to AA. In Central Group in Syracuse, New York, there was this lawyer who had been sober for 14 years, and every Friday night his job was to greet everyone who walked into that group. He was a big man with big hands and a big smile, and he was a politician too. Also very rich, as I know later. But as I was walking to the doors of AA, he seen me with my long hair and wine sores, and he rushed over and he grabbed my hand with his two hands and he says to me, am I so glad to see you? And I wasn't glad to see him at all. And I was not in shape to glad to see anybody. And you know, I said, my first speaker in AA was a lady judge. And you know, if you was to organize AA, you would have never chosen a first speaker to be a lady judge. And I'm sitting in front because that's where they put me. And she said, if you are new, please try to identify. You know, now I look back today because it's, you got to understand it to know how it works. Here I was in my late 20s. I have been away from my own reservation. When I was 14, I went to the CC camp in Patton, Maine, a lumber camp, where I stayed there 4 years washing dishes. Then when I was 18, I joined the Canadian Infantry, where I spent 3.5 years washing more damn dishes. When I was 21, I got my discharge and I took a drink. And I've been in Skid Row for 7 years, and I have never been married, never had a driving license, never owned a car, I couldn't read and write. And I'm sitting in an AA meeting with long hair and wine sores, I'm dirty. I'm living in a rescue mission. I'm supposed to pay 35 cents a night, and I'm behind 3 weeks' rent. Because I have financial problems. And listening to a lady judge says to me, please try to identify. Can you imagine me sitting there saying to myself, you know, I'm just like her. And you know, and it is not that I have never met a judge before. You know, I met one particular judge 43 times. And he never once asked me to try to identify. So I think the time and whatever it is that AA has to offer, which is probably something very special for all of us, time has given me what I never had and perhaps would never will have if I had not been fortunate enough to come back to a type of a program that AA has, and especially a type of people. It's very special people you find in AA, For those of us who are sensitive of where we come from, those of us who feel that we're always being rejected, it just takes a little time sometimes in AA to be able to accept what AA has to offer. This is a very special group. Perhaps it will not be found anywhere else where so many of us can come here willing to join hands and help each other as one people. I am sure God intended that way. But one thing I am sure, that if it was not for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have a type of life that I have today. And for that, I will always be very grateful. I would never would have believed that I am a type of person that the committee in Atlanta, Georgia, I'm sure they all want to select the type of speakers that would make this conference successful. If I know Alkis, that's what they do. So I feel very special that I have been chosen to come this far. I come from a home. My father was a person who liked to drink a lot. And he died. He had a half a gallon of jug under his bed. And I come from a poor family. My father died. We lost 8 members in our family in about 5 years. All of them died with TB. And my mother died when I was 13. And I was happened to think about her last night when the Al-Anon speaker was talking about her school teacher. And I just happened to remember one morning I was sleeping with my mother because she was dying with TB. And I asked her if I was going to die too. And she says to me, no, you're different. You're very strong and you never cry. And I have never forgotten it. Sometimes I think that whatever saved my life, it's because once someone really felt that I was something. When my mother died, people in my reservation thought that I had TB. And in my time, people were afraid of it. So I couldn't find a home. I lived in an old empty house with a dog for about a year. But people in my reservation, they used to talk about lumber camps in Maine. And I wanted to leave home. I've always wanted to be somebody in life from the time I was a kid. I spent half of my life dreaming that one day I would have a big home and that I would have a nice job. Beautiful girl. That's probably why I'm an Alki. I wanted a nice car, a lot of nice clothes. I just felt that people who had these things never feel the way I do, and people will not treat you the way they treat me. And you know, it's funny, when I left home Thursday, I left a 14-room house. My wife says to me, honey, which car are you taking? You know, I live like a white man, dollar down and dollar a week, and I... And I had a ticket to go on a plane, and I'm invited. All these things happening, and I don't even feel important. But I wanted these things, and probably saved my life. I have never once in my life figured suicide. From the time I can remember, I've always wanted to live, just that I didn't know how. I left home and on a freight. And I arrived in Patton, Maine, and I wanted a job But Paula says I was too young. But the war started taking all the younger people, and he said the camp was 20-some miles in the woods, and they needed a dishwasher. And it was, if I wished to go, it was all right with him, and I did. And I met a fellow by the name of Bill Langster, and he gave me a job, and he became a very good friend with his family. I knew his family well. It was a good family. And I stayed with him for 4 years, and they decided that I should join the Canadian Army. They felt that it was unhealthy that I should live in a lumber camp for so long with older people. And that's when my problem started, as I see today. He wanted me to join younger people. I joined the Canadian Infantry. And because I have no education, I couldn't go on training. And they gave me a job washing dishes. And it didn't bother me in lumber camp, but it told me something different in the Army. It told me that I wasn't good enough. Something that I have never been able to handle in my life. Probably one reason why I spend most of my life looking for approval and looking for acceptance. I never had what AA talks about, the spirit of independence, to believe and stand up for what I am. One reason why I am successful in life today is because I live on what I have been taught, not what other people want me to be. Some of them are very nice people, but they don't have answers for me. They only want me to be what they want me to be. And so I felt unworthy in the Army. Paula told me that I should take another test. And I agreed because I didn't thought I was stupid. But I took another test and they marked me M4, which meant that I wasn't qualified to be trained. And I think the worst type of a sickness that I have, I totally accepted what Canadian Army said. And it took maybe 10 years in AA, with all the education that AA has to offer, with all the people that are willing to help you, before I was willing to take another look, that maybe people are wrong. Maybe I am something. Maybe I know something. But at that time, I totally accepted it, and I never questioned it, and I hated being in the Army. I never went home. Because I didn't want my people to know I was washing dishes. I wouldn't go out with a date because I was ashamed. I had this problem of, I suppose, looking for approval. It was like punishment, just being alive. My wife and I met in AA. We've been married all better than 19 years now. Sometimes we speak together in an AA meeting. And we both belong to different groups because my group is better than hers. My wife would say that she is the type of person should have never taken a drink. And I think if you're in the program for some time, you learn to see an awful lot of things about yourself. Because I think it's the type of an education that AA has to offer that allows you to find a new vision, to look back and to see those things that you pass by in life. I can identify when my wife said, I am a type of person should have never taken a drink. But I also know that I am a type of person who needed a drink. When I discovered alcohol, I was 21 years old. I have just gotten discharged. And I never drank before simply because my father drank. I never wanted to drink because I never wanted to be like my father. But when I drank, alcohol took away, I think, all the things that robbed me from living. I think first time I felt something is when I drank, because when I drank, I could talk to anybody, and I didn't realize how painful it was when you can't talk to people because you feel that you're different. I'm sure that God intended, when he gave man the freedom of choice, to feel comfortable with other human beings. I've never had that comfort. But when I drank, I could talk to anybody, and it didn't bother me where you came from. I can identify with people who get up and tell us they could dance better. I did too. As a matter of fact, I went out with a girl the first night I got drunk. It was about time. When I drank, if you didn't like me, you had problems. And I liked it. It was a freedom. Alcohol, for me, was a magic. We have in our noon meeting in our area in Worcester, we have a noontime meeting, 11 to 12, and we have about 200 to 250 people every day. And among them, people are professors and colleges, priests from Holy Cross, and some bums who come walking in looking for handouts. It reminds me of what I used to be. But it is a very healthy meeting because you have opinions from different walks of life. And I've learned so much about that meeting, about drinking, about people talk about alcoholism, and I can identify. And I am a type of person that have never been a social drinker. If someone had told me that night in Bluery Cafe in Montreal, you know, where I took my first drink, I was all dressed up, the girl was singing in an orchestra, practically with no clothes on, and that, I loved that. And the atmosphere was right. If someone came to me and said, "John, don't take this stuff. It'll kill you." I was an alcoholic then. But you know, and I know, that it's a type of an illness that you don't, doesn't allow you to see. How could anything be so bad when it makes you feel so good? How could anything be so bad when it gives you, first time in your life, when you allow you to be free from what you are? It seems that it's a type of an illness that, while in one hand it seems to give you what you want the most, and on the other hand it starts robbing you in such a way that you don't know. And I am that type of person. I know it today. I don't believe I am an alcoholic because I was born in reservation and because I don't talk good English or because I never went to school or because I couldn't go to bed with a girl. I believe that there is a lot of people walk around today who feel the way I used to do, and some of them poor bastards don't even know enough to drink. I believe that now that I am married with 6 children, now that I have a couple of cars, a nice home, now that I have so many friends, now that I am no longer suffering from all the things I suffered from, the truth is I cannot drink because I am an alcoholic. The beautiful thing I have learned in the program, I am what I am, nothing changes it. But I didn't know it then. I am a type of person who tried hard to stop drinking One of the reasons, I guess, why I was so sick is that I tried so hard because I wanted to be somebody. I never wanted to be what I was. I dreamt about it for better than 34 years. I just wanted to be someone different. I wanted to be important. I never could stand people who looked down on me. And that was one of the biggest problems I had in life when I was sober. And this professor who speaks in Worcester, he talks about the worst kind of a sickness that we have, that when we are dangerous the most is when we are sober. Because every alcoholic would go back to a drink after he sobers up. And nobody will ever understand. Especially people love you will never understand why do you go back to something that is so destructive. Not only to you, but everything that a man stands for. You have to be sick and you have to be crazy to go back. And that professor pounded that to these people who come to AA. I am that type of person. And I would go back with the idea many times that I deserve it. I deserve to drink because I've been working in Salvation Army for 8 weeks for $1 a week. And all I can steal. And I'm healthy. I'm 20-some years old and I got a suit on that I got from Salvation Army. Some poor bastard probably died in cirrhosis of liver and I'm wearing his suit. But it tells me, John, it's about time you had a few drinks. I deserve to drink. I have that type of a sickness and I have to learn in AA. Stay away from that first drink. Stay away from it no matter how you feel because it has nothing to do how you feel. You know, you listen to alcoholics and they will tell you. They get drunk because they lost a job. And then they got drunk because they found one. They got drunk because someone dies and they get drunk because someone borns. They get drunk because they get so mad and they get drunk because they were so happy. The truth is that we get drunk. We get drunk. Did you meet a new person in AA who's going to get drunk because he has a lot of problems? Don't worry about it. He'll get drunk when he has any. So I came to AA, and I was in a central group in Syracuse, New York. And I was listening to this lady judge. And I didn't feel at home at all. I felt that getting old, I can't see my watch. And after the meeting, I decided to leave. But this lawyer who greeted me stood at the door, and as I was leaving, he stopped me and he put his arms around me and he says to me, I have some friends here and I want you to meet them. And that was my first introduction in AA. And I guess probably the only thing I received in my first meeting is probably the same thing that I enjoy today, and that is the feeling of you're accepted here. It's all right. They asked me to come back. And coming back, it's been the only thing that I have done right. Somebody asked me one night what I thought that I received the most in AA. And when I look back in my own life, I must say that I came back. I needed to come back. I needed to learn about my sickness. I needed to learn what AA talks about. I needed to change my life, change my attitude. It was here. I didn't know it, but I came back. And I met my sponsor here, Pat. My sponsor is someone I never liked. It was a Skid Row bum. And the reason I didn't like him, not because he had a degree, which he did, but Major Harvey always gave him a job working in the office. And Pat has a tendency of looking down on you. He gets all dressed up and he works in the office. I get $1 a week and he's making 16 a week, and I didn't like that. And then he looked down on me after I work hard all day. He said, "Did you work hard today, Johnny?" Had that brogue, you know. And I said to myself, next time we get drunk, I'm going to kill the bastard. A couple of times I almost did, too. He used to say to Bumsy, "Hit you for nothing, it's crazy." But Pat disappeared. And in Central Group, one night he walked in all dressed up like he was when he was sober. And he had a girl. He walks up to me and he said, "John, I'm your sponsor." And said, "I have a new car outside." And he used to pick me up in a mission every night. And you're talking about love last night. A lot of things. I'm the type of person who, my mind flashes. I see things when I listen to people. And I was thinking about Pat, who used to come with a have a sandwich last night. And he used to say that he could only eat half of it. And I've learned years later that Pat never eats sandwiches. And it was kind of nice for me to know that. But he stopped the car one night about 6 months later and he says to me, "John, I know you love the program, but you can't stay sober living in a mission. You should leave." And that kind of scared me. And I felt that I could stay sober if I stay in a mission. But I think God was on his side because the damn place burned down one night. And 3 o'clock in the morning. So they gave me a job. He brought me over to open house, they call it. And they gave me a job working there for $7.50 a week. And I stayed there free. And my job was to wash and wax floors and to make coffee and answer telephone and wash dishes. That's another good thing that happened to me living like a white man. I bought a dishwasher. This fella had it all hooked up, and I said to my daughter who was filming, I said, "Let me push the button." And I pushed the button and this thing just hums, and I said, "Hum, you cheap bastard." The plumber said, "What's that all about?" But they threw me out in open house because I had a lot of trouble most of my life getting along with people. You know, when you are people pleaser, most of the time you live on what you feel. What is it that someone said? You act on your feelings because you haven't got something greater to live by, which is living on. The second step says the key that opens the door to a program of recovery, it is willingness to believe, to become teachable on a new way of life. But I've never learned how to live. All I know was that if you say something that makes me feel bad, there is a good chance you're in trouble. And that's the way I lived. And I get a call one night, a girl, her name was Anne. I've never met her, but she wanted help. And people who came to this place, they play cards all night. I told them that there was someone who needed help. And when they find out who she was, they told me that she's been around for years and that's all she does is use people in AA. Now, I knew that was wrong. My problem is, how do I deal something when I'm right? I did the way I always do. I upset the table. And I punched one of them right in his mouth. And I knocked him down right on his ass. And that was my first 12-step call. And they'd throw me out. And you know, you look back, and I was so convinced that they didn't like me. The reason that throw me out is because they didn't like me. The reason that throw me out is that I didn't know how to live. And Pat picked me up and he brought me back to Major Harvey, Salvation Army. And I was with Major Harvey for another year and a half. Then I started to travel. I had a lot of trouble. I was in your club not too long ago, last week. Jim brought me over there and I attended the meeting. And I was listening to people over there that I can truly identify with. You know, financial problems, emotional problems. And I remember walking down the street 3 o'clock in the morning, no home. Pat picked me up and he brought me to his home. And I was so sick and tired of working in Salvation Army, I left and I started hitchhiking. And I traveled all over the country. And the only thing I had was the World Directory. I went to meetings every night, but I couldn't tell anybody. You know, I would sleep in the cars. Because, you know, it's people in AA, you know, they expect you to do more. Which I think is very good. Especially if you're sober 5 years like I was. They have a tendency of telling you that you're practicing the wrong step. So I kept my mouth shut. Most of us and a lot of us, we have bad feelings inside and we have trouble sharing. Loneliness, it's, if you're a man, sleeping in the car, you're a member of AA, who do you tell that you're lonely? It requires humility, which I've never had. You know, what do you say to a girl? It's the human things in life that's so painful. Who do you tell? But you know, there is something to be said of coming back to AA meetings. I arrived in Marlboro, Mass. That's how I got in Mass, Massachusetts. 1 o'clock in the morning. I didn't know the name of the town. I was hitchhiking. I was sober 5 years. But Marlboro has been a turning point in my life. I slept in a men's room in a hotel. And I went to a meeting and I met a fellow by the name of Paul, who owned a restaurant. He was looking for someone to help. Boy, was he looking for someone to help. He was one of those sick people that never leave you alone in AA. He would give me a breakfast. Don't worry about it, John. Pay me later, he would say. But you know, I needed something like that. I'm not the type of person who could walk into a restaurant and say, I want a free breakfast. And I remember sitting there one morning and the waitress asked me if I knew of any contractor that remodeled and painted houses. And I said, I did. I said, I do that. He said, I didn't know you were a contractor. I said, I didn't either. And that was my first job. I gave her a price for $300 and I got it right away because other people wanted $1,400. And here I am, I got a job, no home, no car, no money. And I said to Paul, I got a job, but how do I start? I don't have money. He said, why don't you ask Rita? She let you have some money. She gave me $100. So I went out and I bought a paint and coveralls and scraper. I bought a coveralls because I felt if you're going to be a president in your own company, you might as well have coveralls. And then I got a ladder from someone who worked in a telephone company in AA. They even delivered it for me. They were so anxious that I work. And thank God for Paul, I think I owed $65 when I finished working. My next job was a plumber in AA who owned a house 7 miles from Marlboro, Mass. He said, John, all you need is a 10-foot step ladder. So I borrowed a 10-foot step ladder and I got all my drop cloths together and I stood in the corner and I stopped the bus. And this guy stopped and he looks at me. And he looks at my ladder and he says, you're not serious. I said, I am. I'm self-employed. it must have been an alcohol. He says to me, if I give you a ride, would you promise you'll never do it again? My next job was school teacher. Became a very good friend. I was working in her house, and she told me that she taught school for 40 years. And so I asked her one night if she could. I wanted a driving license. I wanted to stay in business. But there were 69 questions that you have to answer. And I asked her if she could help me to memorize them. She said she taught thousands of people. So I used to see her every night, and about 3 months later, I was able to memorize all the 69 questions. And when I took the test, I passed. So here I was in my 50 years of sobriety, president in my own company. And I had a driving license, and Paul, who owned a restaurant, came to see me one day with 11 passenger station wagon. He said, John, this car you can get for $700. And I didn't have $700. But I borrowed the money from where I was working. And lady gave me enough money for the down payment. And here I was, president in my own company, driving license, and I had 11 passenger station wagon. Then I decided to find me a girlfriend. But I have this 4 teeth in front missing, and that's the only thing I've lost in drinking. You know, in Syracuse, New York, there is a bar room they call Smitty's. That's where all the New York Indians drink, in Smitty's. I'm a Mi'kmaq Indian. I don't drink in Smitty's. Because Mi'kmaqs and New York Indians don't communicate too well. And every once in a while, 20 of us Mi'kmaqs would get drunk and we go to Smitty's. Then we would communicate. One Saturday afternoon, I was walking by Smitty's feeling very good. Somebody opened the door and threw this guy out, and that's where I met Smiley. Smiley is a little Irishman who weighs about 90 pounds with a degree. So I picked him up. I said to him, what in the hell's wrong with you? He said, it's those Indians inside. I said, they can't do that to you. Smiley said, no, they can't. So I put his arms around him and I said, what do you say you and I go in there and clean him out? And Smiley sat in there without scratch. The New York Indians were too proud to beat a little guy up. They almost killed me. And I'm a very sensitive person. I have always felt very uncomfortable of not having a teeth. That's why I wouldn't ask a date. I got my own ideas about what I should be. But there was a dentist in this group. And I've been watching him for about 3 weeks. Because the only thing I don't like about dentists, they hurt people. And I don't like pain. So it's a question of having my teeth fixed to get a girl or forget about it. I've been watching this dentist. He looked very mild. He had a little white hair. And I said, he doesn't look like a type that would hurt anybody. So I cornered him one night. I said, I would like to talk to you. I need some help. He said, what kind of help do you want? Well, I said, I'm looking for a girlfriend. And but I have this teeth missing. And I want you to put some of them back. He gave me his card and I went to see him. And this guy, you know, he wanted to pull 14 teeth. And I said to myself, I shouldn't have come here. And then filled the rest of them before he gave me the set of teeth. I said, how long that's going to take? He says, about 3 months. That's where you learn in AA. They tell you, get what you need and not what you want. But I finally made it. 3 months later, I got these teeth I have today. Jesus and I were so happy. I rushed home and I went upstairs and I laughed for 2 hours. Great set of it. I met Mary in a meeting, and Mary runs a halfway house for women. She said, "John, I'm told that you have a car." I said, 11 passengers. She said, "I have 9 girls that I'm looking for someone to bring these girls to a meeting. Do you like the job?" I said, "I'll be very happy to." That's where I met Kathy. I bring these girls to a meeting, and on our way back, I said to Kathy, "Would you like to go out on a date?" She said, "No." And I can't stand rejection. But on my way home, I start thinking, because of AA. I said to myself, who in the hell she thinks she is? Here she is living in the faith house. She's got nothing. And here I am. I'm president in my own company. I own my own car, a new set of teeth. Who the hell needs her anyway? So next Thursday night, I picked the girls up again, and on our way back, I said to her, "I'll go to a show in Boston Sunday." And she said, "Yes." So we went to a show in Boston, and on our way back, I asked her to marry me. She said, "But I don't know you." So I said, "We still have 5 miles to go. We'll get acquainted." So we got acquainted and got married. We had $85, Kathy and I. A lot of people didn't like us doing AA. And we didn't know where to go. My wife's family, they don't like alcoholics. They used to wear round hats with feathers in those days. And if they see you, they put their nose up. And they didn't like Kathy because she was an alcoholic, and especially when they find out that not only she was an alcoholic, but she was marrying an Indian without feathers. It's amazing about people. Now that I own a 14-room house, 2 cars, and, you know, you can't get rid of the bastard, you know. But we went on our honeymoon. We didn't last too long. We came back with $35. Actually, we went home. And I don't want to talk about that today. And we moved into a 3-room apartment, Kathy and I. And the only thing we had was the coffee table that was given to us from a faith house. We had absolutely nothing. And we had 3 rooms. She says to me, "Where are we going to sleep?" I said to her, "You pick any corner you want." We slept on the floor. But you can have a lot of fun on the floor too, so. Now, if you are new, don't worry about it. I spoke in Westchester County one time, and I mentioned the fact that you can have a lot of fun on the floor, and after the meeting, this lady, Westchester County, everybody's rich over there. Yeah, meeting, they wear jewelry. And this lady came over with all the jewelers, and she says to me, "Young man, I don't know how much fun you can have on the floor," she said, "but I know you can have a lot of fun on the Oriental rug." I said to her, "Thank God at least you identify, you know?" But then my time is about up, and that's where Kathy and I started. I wanted a boy, because I'm the only one left. And I said to Kathy one night, while we were laying on the floor, I would like to have a boy. I want to, someone to all keep my name going. And I said to her, if you give me a boy, I'll buy you a diamond. You got to be sick, you know, when you're laying on the floor because you can't afford a bed. And the beautiful thing about Kathy and I, she was sick enough, so she believed me. And I remembered when she was in a hospital this Christmas, trying to get enough money to buy a diamond. That was the first time I walked into a bank. I wanted $200 and they wouldn't give it to me because I didn't have a collateral. And I didn't know what in the hell it was. You know, people talk about everything in AA, but nobody talks about collateral. And after three banks, I said, "What? I wonder what." I went to see Paul. I said, "Paul, the banks want collateral." He said, "Don't worry about it, John. You don't have it." He said, "What you want to do, John, is pray." I said, "Christ, Paul, they don't need God. They need collateral." I knew that much. But I met a banker in Hudson, which is 7 miles, and I sat down and talked to this old man who was retiring. And I just told him the truth. But he said, "We don't lend money that way." But he said, "I've always prided myself," he said, "when I seen an honest face." Then he says, "How much do you want it anyway?" And he sounded so good. I said, $400. And I got the money. And I went over to the jeweler's store and I said to this man, you give me the, show me the best diamond that you have. And he did. I said, "Show me the cheapest one that you have." And he showed me one for $150. I said, "I'll take it." And he says, "You want to charge it, of course." I said, "Of course." And I brought it to my wife. And she calls me 3 o'clock in the morning. And she's crying. And she said, "Honey, it's a girl. And I've already bought things for a boy." And I was very disappointed. Next Christmas came along and Kathy was in there again. I received a call and she's still crying. She said, "Honey, it's a girl." But by this time, you know, we're told in AA, experience is a great teacher. I went over to see her and I said to her, "Don't worry about it. Just have an open mind and we'll try again." I learned that in the program. So next Christmas came along and she was in there again. And I received a call and she's still crying. But this time it's twin boys. Then I got scared. I rush over and I said to her, "What'd you say that next Christmas we hang our stockings?" But a couple of years later, the girl came along, and then a couple of years later, the boy came along, and I got a daughter graduating from high school. I used to worry about it when I was a kid. I used to come home from meeting. You know, I was 35 years old when I got married, and I have 6 kids, and I was deadly afraid that I wouldn't be here to take care of them, you know. Where am I going to get the money? You know, it's funny about life. Now, my kids are growing, and if they want to go to college, they can go, all 6 of them, because funds are available. You get secure as you grow older in AA. There's something to be said about faith. A lot of nice things in closing. A lot of things happened to me in my life that never would happen. I was once hired by the government to become a director in 3 reservations in the state of Maine. When I was hired, I've already lived in a 14-room house. I've already had 2 cars. I've already had 6 children. They hired me not because I was well-educated. They hired me, I know, because of what I have done for myself. And they sent me to University of Rhode Island to take a test. 3 psychiatrists questioned this brain.
for 3 solid days.
I was supposed to be there 5 days, but it only took me 3 days, and 2 days I laid in the beach. And I came back qualified to be a director in a government program for 3 reservations in the state of Maine. I threw away my coveralls, and then I bought a suit. I arrived in Calais, Maine. I rented my house. They called me up, and they wanted to know if I what color I needed for my wall-to-wall carpet in my office. That was the first thing that impressed me. Second thing impressed me, my secretary. She built like a brick house. And the phone, when the phone rings, buttons lit up. And I didn't dare touch anything. One day I received a call from the University of Maine. They have an adult education program. They want an Indian speaker. He said, "We pay $40 an hour. Would you be interested?" I said, "I would." I went over there. I spoke for 1 hour, and I was so impressed of what I said, I gave them half an hour free. And I learned things in that job that you don't learn in AA. Because this is one side of life where nobody challenges you in AA. I've learned through Dr. Collins that there is such thing as the spirit of independence. There is such thing as living on what you believe in. When you start doing that, people rebel. People go against you. Your own people criticize you. It is difficult to walk what you believe in. But it is my belief that until such time a person lives on what he believes in, he is not ready to do what once President Kennedy says, that the God's will in this world of ours is truly the work of our own. St. Francis said in 11th step, in closing, "I want to be an instrument. I want to be an instrument." Most of us don't think we're good enough for that. For where there is hate, he says, "I want to bring love." Where there is sadness, I want to bring joy. Where there is darkness, I want to bring light. Where there is doubt, I want to bring faith. And he said, "Lord, I pray that I try to understand rather than to be understood." It is reserved to all human beings. When God gave man a freedom to choose, he gave him one of the greatest gifts that denied all the living creatures: right to be an individual. Nobody gets drunk in AA because it's not good. It has never been the lack of what you are that robs you and I from the spirit of giving. But it has always been the lack of acceptance that kills the spirit that we must have in order that we may go in this life where we are with what we have. And I think if there is such thing that AA has to offer, it gives an individual right to be himself. It's nice. Thank you very much.